Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you like the great outdoors? Are you or are you looking to be a master bow hunter, king of the hill in archery? You're in the right place. Welcome to Bow Hunter Planet. It's the Bow Hunter Planet podcast, recorded live in the BHP studios, Detroit, Michigan, with your host, Team BHP.
Hello, welcome to the Bow Hunter Planet podcast. It's me, Dave Thomas, along with Jamie Noteboom, Kevin Conlin, and Chris McGee, and John Cedar sitting in on the headphones tonight. But tonight we are talking to Tony Vandermoor. Tony is one of the most amazing photographers we've seen in the outdoor realm. Huge focus on waterfowl, and we're really excited to have Tony on the show tonight and join us. So let's get him on the horn. All right, cool, man. So hey, how's things going? Tell us about what's up in your realm of waterfowl and amazing imagery. Absolutely want to hear about it.
Well, you know, this time of year is actually my busiest time of year with all the off-season habitat management work, you know, planting corn and beans and all the food the first part of the summer, and then you gotta mow and maintain levees and develop new farms, and then it kind of rolls right into the moist soil planting, you know, millet, buckwheat, things like that that we'll plant later in the summer and got a shorter maturity. It just keeps it pretty darn busy all throughout the year.
Sure. So, yeah, with all the different things you have going on, I mean, I guess my question would be for you is that when we talk about outdoor photography and that lifestyle of waterfowl for you, my first question is, how many cameras have you ruined over the years?
You know, actually, I haven't ruined any yet.
Wow.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah, no doubt. I've got some that got dust spots in them and whatnot, but I haven't dropped one in the water yet.
What's your preferable camera brand? You like Sony, Nikon, Canon?
I've shot Nikons a lot in the past, and I switched over to Canon, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, and I've had very good luck. I really like the Canons that I've got now.
Yeah, I would. You know, we've played with a lot of different realms of cameras here on this end, and I tend to get a little spend happy with cameras just because I want to keep up with the technology, and it's very hard to do sometimes. And I, you know, when Canon did the 5D Mark III, it was a great camera, obviously. The 5D Mark IV came out, I jumped all over it because I was like, man, I got to have it. It's a workhorse of a camera. Now I know they got the R and the S and all that, but that didn't really fit the realm I was thinking in my mind. But, I have to admit, man, the Instagram is awesome to see your shots. It's very exciting, and I love that we, you know, with our Experience Wild program, which is our kind of what fits more in the realm of the upland stuff, and hence why I have Chris on the phone and John sitting in on this call. It's really cool to see that kind of stuff, and I think people just love that stuff. I mean, Chris, mm-hmm. Chris here at the table, it's in the call today, takes a lot of our photography when it comes to waterfowl and ducks and stuff, and they seem to do so well on Instagram with the numbers. It's just incredible what people love to see on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think as outdoorsmen, we're very fortunate, and we get to see things every day that the grand majority of the population don't get to see. And sometimes we can take it for granted, but you capture that moment or you capture that scene, you know, on a camera and you can share it with everybody else, it tends to do very well.
For sure. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's exciting. So what do you have coming up this year? What are you working on right now besides prepping the lands?
Right now we're getting prepping lands, and we're actually, you know, we're getting ready to get rolling. It's
ready to get teal season going.
Yeah, it's the middle of August now. We open September 1st at our Saskatchewan Lodge, and duck season or dove season opens September 1st here in Missouri, and teal season opens September 9th. So,
now how many lodges do you guys have?
We've got Saskatchewan, Missouri, and Arkansas.
Wow, duck hunting capitals.
So, you say it opens September 1st in Saskatchewan, and do the birds start hitting pretty hard right away, or when does it really?
They do.
When's the optimum time to go?
It just depends. I mean, there's not really a bad time to be up there, honestly. Right where our lodge is at, Saskatchewan, it's the heart of the prairie pothole region. So you're going up there that time of year, and a lot of those birds, I mean, they haven't been hatched very long. They're not very smart, which, right or wrong, it is what it is. But there's plenty of birds right off the bat. Canadas and ducks, and usually the first cranes start showing up early September. And then as it progresses, you know, we'll start seeing snow geese about the end of the third week of September or so. Lots of cranes middle of September, and first part of October, little geese show up, more northern mallards, bigger bunches. It's kind of the same up there as it is, you know, here in the States. You start out with not huge numbers, but very, very workable birds, and then as the season progresses, they get into bigger bunches. The weather gets colder, they need to eat more of a pattern to them.
Where are they coming from? Like, how far north are these birds usually coming from? Like, where's their main?
They'll come from a long way. Like, a lot of little geese will nest up on the tundra.
No kidding.
Got your snow geese are coming from the tundra. I mean, these birds make a long trip every year.
Hey, Tony, tell us about how you got in the industry. I mean, every one of us has our story about how we started in this industry. And, you know, and ours is very specific to bow hunting. But, you know, with our experience Wild Realm, we have touched a little bit into the stuff that you're, you know, dabbled into the waterfowl, the upland, and the fishing portions. But tell us about you and, like, how you got into this.
Sure. I mean, I've been doing it, the hunting and outdoor thing, in my whole life. And that's all I've really ever known. My dads and uncles and grandfather, you know, they said they used to take me to duck blind when I was in diapers.
Nice.
Hunting, fishing, trapping, I mean, that's just what we did. I mean, that's what we always had to look forward to on the weekends when I was in school. And it's just kind of, I mean, I watched it, you know, not dominate, but be the primary passion in my dad and uncles and grandfather's lives. And obviously it's easy for it to be instilled in myself, and it's been my primary focus as well. When I got out of college, I'd always wanted, my grandfather had a couple duck clubs when I was a kid, and I always wanted my own ground, you know, private place to hunt that I could work on myself. And I grew up in Illinois and went to school in Missouri and found all the ducks that we used to have in Illinois when I was younger, and never left. Got out of college and bought a farm with a friend, and as it turns out, Habitat Flats, there's four of us, myself and Dan Doherty and Aaron and Ira McCulley. We started Habitat Flats. We all had farms close to each other, and we're good friends, and got to hunt together a lot. Well, when you're spending a lot of money and resources developing habitat, I mean, habitat's not cheap to create, but yeah. When you're only hunting with three or four or five guys, you know, a lot of the spots we weren't getting to use really throughout the fall. So we started Habitat Flats as a way to just kind of subsidize our cost, and it really, really took off.
That's really cool, man. That's really exciting. You know, it's funny because you look at some of these images you guys have. It's just amazing. Now, do you take all these pictures yourself, or do you have a couple friends you work with, or how does that work?
I take a lot of the photos. I mean, a lot of our guides are excellent photographers as well. Tyler Saar, he takes some incredible images. Stan Goosey, I mean, we've got a lot of guys that are very talented with the camera. I mean, we've all shot enough ducks and geese that we're not afraid to put the gun down and pick the camera up.
Right. Yeah, that's really cool. I was just thinking, it's funny because you look at some of these images, and I for one have seen the Instagram stuff where even on our side, it's like, are you ever surprised by some of the pictures that like might do better than you thought they would, or vice versa, something you thought would do really well didn't do as well as far as likes go and people commenting?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always some of them you think you know for sure that people are going to relate to, and some of them are kind of a shot in the dark, and sometimes it pans out, sometimes it doesn't. It's kind of neat to see what works and what makes people you know, what really makes people think and catches their attention and gets them to interact.
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at the numbers. Some are like 4,000, some are 2,000, you know. Some are 1,000. It's interesting the ones they pick.
It looks like if you throw a dog in there, you get a lot more hits.
Yeah, the dog helps a lot.
Everybody likes dogs.
Yeah, now you guys supply the dogs when people come hunt, or most people bring their own? Or?
We do. All of our guys, we've all got really good dogs that are well-trained and that have been at it. You know, they know the game. But our guests are welcome. You know, good dogs are always welcome.
That's cool. Wow, yeah. We're just looking at your pictures while we're talking.
Some amazing photography.
Yeah, really. It's just incredible. Some of these shots are just so cool.
How was it filming with Benelli to do that, to kill a king?
Man, that was pretty wild. Being from the Midwest, that was not necessarily my area of expertise or anything I've ever seen before. It was really, really cool experience. I mean, just to be able to get out there and see it, the journey to get there is what's pretty neat. I mean, you can't shoot that many ducks while you're out there, but the setting and the journey to get there makes it all worthwhile.
Now, when you guys did that, were you guys hunting off like the rock formations out there or shoreline? Or
we did a little bit. Most of what we did, we were in like, I think they were the little 12-foot Zodiacs.
Oh, gosh.
Just a little raft in the middle of the Bering Sea in January. Not something I would have seen myself doing 20 years ago, but I'm glad I got the opportunity to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's really cool. These guns are pretty sweet looking, the camos on them.
Super Black Eagle 3s.
Yeah, this is cool.
The Super Black Eagle 3s are an awesome shotgun.
Now, that's a gas inertia system, I take it?
Yeah, the inertia system. I mean, I've had the Super Black Eagle 1s. You know, what I like about them is that they're not gas. I've always had better luck with the inertia-driven system. And the first year the Super Black Eagle 1s came across the pond, I want to say it was like 91 or 92 maybe, and I started shooting one then, and I was still shooting that gun when the Black Eagle 3 came out, and I never thought I'd put it down until I picked up the 3. The 3's just got a great feel.
Wow, this Benelli booth thing that you guys did, this is unbelievable in Vegas. This is seriously... Yeah. Like, I love how they put the fake rocks in the front. That looks so sick. It, like, looks just like the picture. That's amazing.
They did a fantastic job on that.
I kind of feel like we should do that in our studio. Like, we should put, like, a tree in front of an image that Kevin took in South Dakota with a huge thing. That is seriously awesome. It looks like that top corner of it looks like a claw or something, doesn't it?
Yeah,
like
it does. Behind them. Where the ducks are.
I feel like I'm in Game of Thrones. Like, something's going down. And, you know, it's getting iced. We're going to have winters coming. Now, this is sweet. So sweet, man. This is really cool. How's it been working with Benelli? Has that been kind of fun or exciting or a little bit stressful?
It's been great. I mean, like I said, it's pretty much all I've ever shot. You know, when I was probably a freshman in high school is when the first Black Eagle 1s came from overseas, and that's all I've ever shot. So to be involved with a brand that I've shot for so long and I've got so much faith in is pretty cool for me.
That's really cool. I know when we go upland a lot here, we'll do pheasant in Michigan here, and Chris here has Benelli, and his dad's got some Benellis too, and so when we're out there, it's absolutely amazing to me to shoot that gun versus any other gun, because that inertia system is unbelievable. You don't feel anything.
No kick.
I'm just like pop, 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 pop. You know, it's like so quick. It's amazing.
It's nice. And the new one, the Black Eagle 3, I mean, it weighs less than the original ones, and it actually kicks a lot less.
Wow, that's hard to believe.
It's like,
that's fun. So you also work with Under Armour, correct?
Yes.
So that's kind of cool because I feel like it's kind of a cool system. So you have like the Under Armour clothing, which obviously is going to work really well in that feel, like, you know, what you're doing in these images and stuff as well. Do you get a chance to have Under Armour come out or do some hunting with you guys?
Yeah, they've been out a few times and helped. I've helped develop a line for them. I don't think it's out yet this fall, but it'll be some pretty good stuff when it comes out.
Yeah, I was gonna say it seems to me like a lot of times that's it's important for people like you to be talking with them, and that's one of the reasons I asked that if they come out, because I know that you guys have a close relationship, which is good, because then you're actually giving them tips and tricks that they should be doing in their clothing line, and the guns too, right? It doesn't really matter what the product is. It's stuff that, you know, someone who does every day understands and gets it, and that's important, because what I've been finding is a lot of companies in the industry, and not just this industry but other ones, they might not actually do the exact thing they, you know, promote. For instance, like Chevy, right? I don't know any hunters that work, you know, Chevy marketing. I don't think they do a lot of actual hunting per se, you know what I mean? So they have to rely on other people to get that feeling across. But yeah, definitely. I know the Under Armour people do hunt, though. I know Kip and those guys hunt.
We're just clothing, firearms, everything. I mean, with the technology now as opposed to what it was, you know, when I started or we started, when everybody started 30 years ago, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And do you do any bow hunting at all or not really?
You know, I used to bow hunt a lot. I used to bow hunt almost every day of October before duck season started when I was in college, mostly public ground. And
nice.
I loved it. When I got out and got started in some other things, I just didn't have the time to do it. It's hard for me to leave my dog.
Dog wants to go every time.
How many dogs do you have?
I had three. I'm down to one now, but probably get another one started here this fall.
Wow, that's cool. Now, when you do the training for the dog, how does that work?
My first ones I've done myself, all the finish work. And now, I mean, I've just gotten busier. I mean, life gets busier and busier every day, it seems like. So my trainer is who I breed my male. I breed my males with his females. And he runs them in hunt tests all summer, keeps them in shape. While I don't necessarily have the time to do it, you know, working on the farms. And I've got a 3-year-old daughter now, which occupies a lot of time.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. We all know that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting, man. That's really cool. I think training dogs is absolutely hard, but we have a neighbor, actually, a good friend of our family's, that has a black lab. He had a couple black labs now. This is his second one he's on? Or third one. And they're all pheasant dogs, right? I mean, that's what he's running, mm-hmm. pheasant, Chris? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but yeah, man, watching them work is just amazing. And before that, his dad had, I think, two Britneys we did some upland with. And, you know, we're not like huge upland people, but we do like to go, and, you know, once in a while. But being in Michigan, we just don't have that, you know.
Do a lot of grouse and woodcock.
Yeah, there's other stuff we're working on. And more, a lot of fishing, obviously, because it's, you know, the Great Lakes. So it just makes sense. But yeah, I mean, and watching those dogs work was amazing. And last year, we went out, I think it was in January, actually, or February, went out, and I took the slow motion video camera, the FS5, out there, and it was awesome. It's so hard to get this shot, though, you know, when you don't know when that bird's going to jump, you know, and you're trying to get them on point and figure out where you're at, and then you're pushing for it, you know, so it's hilarious.
You know, for me, anymore, just going out, whether it's upland bird hunting or waterfowl hunting, I mean, the dog, it makes the hunt for me.
Well, watching them work is
just
amazing.
Watching them work is just the beauty of it.
Yeah, pretty cool. Man, these images are awesome, man. I have to admit, they're really, really good.
We're all gawking over them.
We're just looking at them. You know, the problem is every time you look, it brings in new questions.
What kind of camera are you using for most of these?
We're blessed with opportunity. Most of them, got an older 40D, got a 5D Mark II. Actually, you know what, I've always had good glass, the L-series lenses, mm-hmm. but last year I got the 7D Mark II, and that's probably my favorite one.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that you don't have to have a 5D Mark IV to get an awesome image. A lot of it's in post-imaging, you know. So I think that, and that's what I actually had a lady, I was at a camp, we were camping up north just recently, and she asked me about my pictures and said, you know, like, how do you adjust the camera in the field? I said, I don't adjust the camera in the field. I actually shoot in auto, and then I redo it in post, and you know, in RAW. And to me, that's the way to go. But that's for me. Everybody's different. But my thing is, you're not going to spend, you know, 15 minutes trying to set up a camera just to take one shot. And I'm not saying I'm not. I'm not saying other people might, but that's just not my style. But my point is, if you're shooting it raw, you can pretty much do a lot of great things. So, hey, were you're fishing at Lake Michigan?
We did. We got out there when we were up there on vacation.
Awesome.
Where were you at up there? Were you?
We went out of Saugatuck.
Okay, right. Saugatuck, right on. Actually, it's funny because the fishery this year over there in Lake Michigan has just completely been on fire. I mean, the king salmon, they're seeing numbers like they've never seen before. There was a guy, it was 2 weeks ago, that caught a 41.48-pound king salmon. Literally. Yeah, that's the biggest king salmon that's been caught in Lake Michigan since 1978. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, so is that a king you got right there, or is that a steelhead? I can't tell. It's hard to see on the screen.
King.
It is a king. Okay.
Yeah, we caught a lot of fish that morning.
Well, I tell you what, man, if you're ever back in the area, you know, we've got some real good friends out of the Muskegon area in Michigan. Good friend of mine runs a charter boat out of there, and, you know, we get out just about every other week right now.
John brought me, just to give you, Tony, yeah. Just to give you an idea. John brought me 45 pounds of salmon, and he's got way more.
And that was like three fillets. I mean, we've been just hammering the kings lately. We've been getting into steelhead. We've been getting into the browns,
Lakers,
coho. Yeah, Lakers. I mean, it's just been an unusual year. You know, talking with my buddy that's a charter boat captain out there, he's just saying this is some of the best fishing he's seen in years.
We definitely don't have big bucks, and we definitely don't have great upland, but we do have fish.
We have some huge fish.
We have some ducks, too.
Some ducks, but, you know, I'm nothing.
Yeah, so seriously, though, if you're ever in the area, you know,
more hit welcome.
Us up. Hit us up on Experience Wild or at Bowhunter Planet, and we'll try to hook up.
Yeah. Where'd you go for vacation in Saugatuck?
Yeah, my wife's family used to have a house there.
Oh, and, cool.
We used to go up there a lot.
Okay.
And they just sold it here a year or two ago, so we all still go back and rent these cottages and just kind of let the kids play on the beach and have fun for a couple days.
Yeah, that's exciting. I love, you know, the upper Michigan's so beautiful, the whole coast of that side, and it's really exciting to...
It's real nice living, like, being surrounded by water like that. I mean, I think it's what kind of makes Michigan a little bit unique is, you know, it's a peninsula and you've got all the Great Lakes. So there's a lot of waterfowl. There's a lot of, you know, great fishing to be done. You know, unfortunately for Chris this past season, you know, the migration really sucked. It was just so warm and it was really late. You know, it was coming towards the end of our you know, goose season that we really started seeing birds show up.
Yeah, we've seen that in a lot of parts of the country.
Just too warm. Nothing froze up north and birds never moved.
Yeah.
It's always something.
Yeah, it's always something.
Hey, Tony, we do some stuff with Yeti, too. Have you? What's your thoughts on that hopper? Because that's been one of my favorite things I've actually used in the field.
Yeah, it's awesome. I really like the hopper, too, and really the flip now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. If you're listening to this podcast and you have not checked out Yeti's stuff, man, that hopper and the flip are legit, like literally legit. And I don't get paid by Yeti. I don't, you know, we just work with them on certain things, little things, but I can't say anything better. That's like the best mini cooler I've ever used in my life. I mean, literally, holds ice, unreal. And for someone like Tony here, I mean, this is like a perfect, that bag is probably perfect for ducks and stuff like that in the field.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's awesome.
And then, that, and obviously all their other little stuff is a lot of fun. Oh, the one thing they sent me that I can't get over, I love it. Is the tank? Do you have a tank?
Yeah, we've got it. Sits on our lodge, and we'll put it on the back patio and fill it full of ice and beer and
yeah. Mine's still on my patio now. I use it for every party, the kids' parties, everything. That's like the best thing ever made. It's simple.
Little lid, and it'll hold ice all weekend sitting out there in the sun.
It's yep. Mm-hmm. I tested on a mini test. I had my son's birthday. And I left it the way it was, and 4 days later it took to melt at all. It was unreal with that little lid on.
Yeah, those Yetis will hold ice forever. I mean, that's like even the tumbler. I mean, I've had ice in my tumbler for like 3 days before with ice water. Yeah.
Or coffee. Yeah. I did a coffee in the morning, and I came back at like 11. It was still hot.
Absolutely. Wow.
Unbelievable.
So I got to ask about your dogs, Tony. So you're primarily running just black labs?
I do, yep.
And then I believe Was that the video you shared with me, Chris? The one where you had a dog that passed away recently.
Rough.
Yeah, that was my old one, Rough. He was pretty special.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's
tear jerker.
It's kind of wild. Yeah, I mean, it brought tears in my eyes. I mean, I've always had labs myself, so I can kind of, you know, definitely relate. But yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you putting out that video. That was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, it was hard to do. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, I like talking about that old dog, but it's hard to do it.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's cool. Nice to have that memory, though.
Yeah,
that you can always look back at when you feel like crying, when you feel like letting loose. You can go back to that video.
That was a great video, man. You know, we definitely wanted.
For me, it was cool. They could capture how much he meant to me, and you know, that so many people could relate. I mean,
oh, exactly.
My story. I got to tell it, but I mean, it happens to people every day.
Yeah, that was his story too, you know, the story of Rough. I appreciate that, man. It was a great video.
All right, Tony. Well, hey, man, thanks for joining us on the podcast. We appreciate your time, and it's been awesome talking to you about all this stuff. It's really exciting, and the outdoor lifestyle is just so cool, and every aspect of it, and I think that's why it's fun to learn about what you do and how it works and all that. So, man, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Well, guys, thanks for having me. If you ever get through Missouri, look me up.
We'll do. Sure, man. Definitely love to do that. Same thing for Michigan, man. Seriously, come pay us a visit one of these days.
Yeah, we'll get up to Muskegon one of these days.
There you go. Yeah, no, we're talking.
All right, see you, Tony. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Tony.
Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Bowhunter Planet podcast online at bowhunterplanet.com with your host, Team BHP. Check us out on Facebook at Bowhunter Planet. We'll catch you next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.